Welcome to The Wonder, exploring perspectives, rituals, and observances of modern, naturalistic, earth-revering, pagan religious paths. Here are your hosts, Yucca and Mark.
Hi, and welcome back to The Wonder, science-based paganism. I'm your host, Mark.
And I'm Yucca.
And today we are going to talk about the Sabbath that happens at the beginning of August, which is of many names. It is the midpoint between the summer solstice and the autumnal equinox. And Yucca and I celebrate it and name it very differently. So we're going to have a lively conversation about all the differences in our experiences of this time of the year. So that's the plan. So this is a really exciting time of year for you, Yucca.
It is. This is the time of year that there is the most life. Everything is, I mean, it's alive all of the time, but the expression of it, this is one of the very few times of year where things are green. It seems like all of the life is out and active and there's a freshness. So I should step back and say that I live in the desert southwest. I live in the high desert as well. I'm at 7,000 feet. So we do have a very full range of different kinds of seasons. But this is our monsoon season. This is the time of year where we get most of our rain, which is not a lot. About 12 inches, or of all of our precipitation, 12 inches for the whole year, and the bulk of it comes in these few weeks to few months. So this is the time where we have afternoon thunderstorms, where the rain will come and just incredibly heavy storms. It will rain down, and then the clouds, which are towering into the sky, disappear. We'll have clear, starry nights and incredible sunsets this time of year as well, where they stretch across half the sky in pinks and golds. And the nights are short, but everything is awake. This is the time when the lichens and mosses, which you don't even know are there the rest of the time of year, turn bright, fairy green. And it's just, for lack of a better word, it's just such a magical time period. It's, I think, it's hard to choose a favorite time of year, but I'd have to say this is it, if you pressed me.
I've been in the Southwest during this season many times, actually, August, September. I spent 2 weeks in Tucson at a debate institute when I was in college in the first 2 weeks of August. And I really echo everything about that. The sunsets, the amazing thunderstorms, you know, with multiple bolts of lightning hitting the ground at the same time, and the pounding rain into the dry dust, and flash floods in the arroyos and everything. And then it's gone. Gone, and you'll see it tomorrow.
Yep.
But the stars are, the sky is incredibly bright. So yeah, it's a beautiful, beautiful time.
And the smell.
Mm-hmm.
The smell of rain, and every place has its own smell of rain, but there's something about desert rain that I know any of you who are listening who have smelt it know what I'm talking about.
Yes, yes.
There's just nothing like it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Wet sagebrush is just extraordinary. Sagebrush is one of my favorite plants because it reminds me so of the desert.
Mm-hmm.
And the desert is far away from where I am. It's a good long distance to get to the desert from where I am. But I have fond memories of desert from when I was a kid, and I've traveled to the Southwest several times since then, and it's just a very special part of the world to me, and this is the time.
Yeah.
Well, my experience of this is very, very different. Before going into kind of how I name this Sabbath and how I celebrate it and all that kind of stuff, this is sort of a ghost Sabbath for me because nothing really significant is changing right now. Everything is incrementally changing, as it will throughout the seasons, but there's nothing, there's no hard boundary here. It's not like there's the arrival of the first thunderstorm or something like that. In our case, during July, we have a lot of very hot weather, which eventually kind of primes the pump for what we call the fog cycle. And what that means is that the inland valleys in California get extremely hot, and because they're hot, the air expands, which creates a low pressure zone, which draws moist, cooler air in from the ocean. And I am only about 30 miles from the ocean. So it creates this blanket that burns off around noon, and then you have these beautiful sparkling days. But it's a cyclical process. That'll happen for a couple of days, and then because it's cooled off and the inland valleys have cooled off, they don't have enough of a pressure cycle to suck that ocean air in. So then we get the full bore of the sun, and we had days last week in the, you know, 105, 107, really very, very warm. So August is the time of intermittent fog and intermittent blazing temperatures for us. And that is kind of the height of summer in many ways. There are some noticeable impacts ecologically. This is the time of blackberries. We have many wild blackberries here. They're actually an invasive species. There is a native blackberry, but there's a native three-leafed blackberry, but the five-leafed blackberry is endemic here. It invades everything. It's like English ivy in that way. You find
it's much more aggressive.
Very much so. And to be honest, as invasive species go, it's not that bad. It feeds wildlife a lot. The berries are incredibly abundant. And it provides nesting habitat for certain kinds of birds that live in hedges because of all the thorns. So, I mean, I'd hate it if it were in my yard because it can't be killed. Its roots go down something like 20 feet. But
you said it's tasty.
I like blackberries, though. I like blackberry cobbler. I like blackberry pie. And there's a lot of that happening around here right now. Also a lot of zucchini, a lot of plums. Stone fruit is happening in a major way right now. Plums and peaches. Mm-hmm. So there are certain kinds of milestones that I can recognize that this is the time of year, but it doesn't have a character that I can just, like Yule or Samhain or May Day. It doesn't have kind of associated lore like that, where I can say, this is the time when I shall inflate my llamas pool and and perform my llamas dive, you know, whatever it is. So I actually call this Sabbath summer's end, because even though we're going to have a lot more hot weather, we're going to have extremely hot weather in September when that fog cycle ends, and then it's just sunlight all the time and very, very warm, just baking, and no rain yet. We may have one rainstorm in September, but then we won't see anything till November or something. But I call it summer's end because there's a logic to it. If Yule is midwinter, then, and if the summer solstice is midsummer, then this is the end of summer. It's the beginning of autumn. And one thing that I do see happening in August is that I see the beginning of the edge of color around the edges of the deciduous trees. I can tell that the sun is a little bit less intense than it was in June and July. It's coming in at somewhat more of an oblique angle. It's subtle, but because I'm a pagan, I'm looking for it. And I do see that the character of the light has changed, and the sky is often strewn with kind of bright cirrus cloud paintings. But it's a subtle Sabbath. It's much less dramatic where I am than some of the others.
Yeah. Well, we've touched on this before. For my climate, the Sabbaths are not really the transition points for the season. They are the middle of the season for us. Right? Mm-hmm. I think of this as second summer, and this is the middle of second summer, and it'll really be around the beginning of September that we transition into the first season of autumn or the first season of fall.
Uh-huh.
Whereas other places that this, like you were saying, or if we think about a different Sabbath, like that it does mark the beginning. You know, the spring equinox for some people really is, okay, now this is the transition into spring rather than the midpoint.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I think one thing in the traditional definitions of these Sabbaths that does resonate for me is that this is around the time of the first harvest. We have alfalfa fields and hay fields around here that get mown around this time. And the earliest of the grape harvest happens in August. The grape harvest is huge here because it's wine country and there's a tremendous amount of vineyards around. And what is called the crush happens typically in the last week of August leading into maybe the third week in September, and you can smell everywhere the smell of the decomposing must is what it's called, the crushed grapefruit flesh, because it's all being crushed and the juice then is being run into barrels and inoculated with yeast and starting its life cycle. So that piece jibes very neatly with the sort of traditional idea of Lammas as first harvest, the grains and so forth, and then harvest or Mabon in September being kind of the second harvest of vegetables and so forth. That all works out pretty well.
I think that's something that our environments share, at least. Well, we don't have a lot of grain production here. Now, we have our grasslands. We have the natural grasslands, which is what we are. And so for us, this time is a celebration of those grasslands. But this is, in terms of the gardens, this is really the first time where there is a big harvest. We've been doing little leafy greens and whatnot throughout the year, but now so many zucchinis, as you were saying.
I was going to say zucchini.
The winter squash won't be till the end of the season, but now the zucchinis and finally there are tomatoes and the fruits, and our stone fruits just started dropping, although we had some really late frosts, so most of the fruits didn't make it this year. But those that did, we've got the first round, you know, there'll be some later apples and things, but it's in addition to the rains, there's just abundance everywhere. And it's the first time you can start really doing a full, you know, harvest and if you can, starting the canning like crazy and all of that.
Sure. As I've designed my Wheel of the Year, one of the things that I have assigned to this particular Sabbath is the celebration of work and technology. For one thing, because part of the nature of the sort of traditional Wiccan Wheel of the Year is that it's built around this very romanticized sort of old, ye old timey kind of idea of the world. Mm-hmm. And I feel like we live in a technological world. We live in a world where technology is a big player, and to not have that recognized for in some Sabbath makes no sense to me at all. So, and because of all of this harvest happening, suddenly you've gone from summer solstice, which is really a time of leisure, at least here. It's a time when all the planting's done and all the sowing is done, and all you can do is just kind of wait around, hope that things grow, and have a beer. But this time here, it's time to work again. The harvest is, the harvest is a time of great effort, whether it's harvesting hay and baling it, or whether it's, you know, bringing in the grapes and crushing them, or whether it's just, you know, bringing in the stone fruit or the fruits of your garden. There's so much work to be done now, and I feel like work and technology really go hand in hand, because we create technology to advance our capacity for work. So I celebrate this time as a celebration of our ingenuity and our work and our effort.
That's beautiful.
Oh, thank you.
I like that. Yeah, I don't have that incorporated into the way that we practice the Wheel of the Year, but I'm going to really reflect on that, because you make a fantastic point.
Thank you.
So, yeah.
So, harvest time, lots of work, lots of effort to be done, and it all kind of leads up to the next Sabbath then, which is the autumnal equinox, or Mabon, or what I call harvest, because that's when you're literally buried in food. and it's time to have big feasts and pile on as many calories as you can and celebrate with your family and friends and coworkers and everybody who helped you to bring all that stuff in from the field. And so this is sort of the beginning of that arc that happens between now and then. And then, of course, when you get to Hallows, that's the third harvest, which is the flesh harvest, which is, you know, you winnow your herds down to be as small as possible so that they can survive the winter. And, you know, that's why it's associated with death and all that kind of stuff. But we'll talk about that then.
Yeah. Well, this for us is about the grasslands. A lot of people celebrate it as a celebration of the grain harvest, but we don't actually eat grains, except for the occasional beer, although we're more of cider and mead folks. But grasslands are, well, they're very near and dear to my heart, as my first degree was actually in rangeland management, and that's something I still work in. But the each of the seasons of the Wheel of the Year, we have sort of an assigned meaning to it as well. And for symmetry, I would have loved if this was at summer solstice, but it just doesn't work with my climate. The grasslands aren't ready yet. That's really when we celebrate our arthropods and the insects. But this time of year is when the grasslands are really in for our climate, in their peak. And as an ecosystem, they are just, I mean, they're more than 40% of the terrestrial biomes are grasslands, and so fertile when managed and taken care of. And the soil is just incredible. And what they have done for our biosphere for millions of years is just, I think, so worth celebrating. And when you had said, I was curious when you had said for you it was this holiday was something of a ghost Sabbath. I personally immediately thought of the missing megafauna
of
the grasslands, because in the ecosystems that most of us in North America are inhabiting are missing the large animals that co-evolved with them.
Very much
and
so,
it
yes.
Really, they are ghost ecosystems in a lot of ways. They're struggling. And it's hard for us as humans to see that on our time scale. Where
sure, because we never saw the Uinta beasts and you know, the giant sloths and the American camels and horses and all those things.
But for this time scale of ecosystems, they were lost so just a blink of the eye ago.
Sure.
And so the systems are suffering, but we don't see that. It's like having a grandparent who has Alzheimer's. You never knew them when they were young and you know, didn't have that it hadn't set in yet. So you don't have as a child and you have someone with dementia, the wrongness, I don't like the word wrongness, but the difference isn't as easy for you to see.
Sure.
Because you don't have that perspective.
I think the closest that we have is that we do have an understanding of bison as you know, sort of natural phenomena of the grasslands.
Yeah.
The bison are really kind of the last. And the smallest of
the
those ones, fauna,
the,
yes.
The bison that we have now are literally the dwarf species.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, those were big animals.
Yeah. I like bison. They're jerks, though, just like chickens.
And camels. They are not friendly. They do not like you. They're not your friend. They just want to do what they want to do.
My brother's a Yellowstone ranger, and he's constantly telling me stories about people trying to take selfies with the animals and just and getting gored, right? It's like, what are you
doing? Yeah. Yeah.
But anyways, but this time of coming back to the topic here, this time of the year is really a celebration of the grasslands, but also a recognition of the loss that we have.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And that existing in that interesting place of both emotions, both realities at once.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So
yeah. Well, it's so interesting to talk with you about this because our experiences of this are really so different. I mean, when I have thought about organizing a ritual for this time of year, I've always been at kind of a loss. Well, you know, what's the central activity? What's the theme? I mean, one year we went to the beach
mm-hmm.
because, well, that's a thing you do this time of year. You go to the beach.
Yeah.
And we had a wonderful time and so forth, but there really wasn't that spiritual component to it that I would have liked for there to be. But as we're recording this a couple of weeks in advance of when this is actually happening, I've been given some good stuff to think about, and I think, you know, I'll be able to do something more coherent and focused for myself and my partner this week. Or this year.
Mm. An idea for some, it happens a little bit later, but this time of year, there's a lot happening with the sky.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are meteor showers, and of course, there's the comet, Neowise, that's happening right now that I'm very excited about. We're going to go out and find it tonight.
That's great.
I'm just going to keep driving until I find a spot where I can see it, unless the fog comes in, which if it does, then we're screwed. But I'm determined. I've been going out every night to look for it, and I haven't been able to see it. So
I have not been able to see it yet, and I'm pretty sure that's because it's behind the mountains. I'm going to have to... We're dark enough that we could see it, but we're just too tucked underneath the mountains right here that I think it's out of sight. So that won't be every year for folks, but the Perseids, those will be every year.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm sure that... So we've just been talking about our different climates, but our listeners are going to be from all over.
Right. And I think the key takeaway from this is understand what's going on in your local environment and celebrate that.
Yeah.
Celebrate the metaphorical meanings of that and the literal physical meanings of that, because in my opinion, that's what paganism really is. Paganism is about a relationship with the earth. I mean, there are other kinds of paganism that are about relationships with gods and things like that, but that's really not my area. I'm not, that's not what I'm focused on. In my world, being a pagan is about having a rich and communicative relationship with the natural world. And so I invite our listeners to be, you know, just get out a piece of paper and jot down what's happening in your local environment right now. What kind of birds are around? What does the sky look like? What are the weather patterns like? Do that for a little bit and you will surely come up with some themes that will make for a good celebration of Summer's End or Lammas or Lunasa or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, I haven't gotten a name that sticks quite yet for it.
Yeah, it's a slippery Sabbath. It really is.
Yeah, we'll call it Second Summer. I usually use Lammas because I can spell that word when talking with other people. But yeah, it hasn't quite got a name yet.
Uh-huh. And you say you don't eat grain. So is that like a gluten issue, or you just don't because it's not produced in your local area?
Kind of a combination, that I have a lot of concerns about pesticide loads in many of the grains. My partner does much, much better on lower carbs, and grains are primarily carbs. I feel kind of bloated. I don't, you know, it's not celiacs or anything like that, but it's just a discomfort with it.
Sure. Well, if you're not accustomed to eating it, your microbiome won't be accustomed to processing it. So that completely makes sense. The reason that I ask is that Lammas is a contraction of loafmas.
Yeah.
Which was originally, well, this is the time that we make bread because we're mowing down tons of grain and we need to process it, right?
Yeah.
Often I have made bread at this time of year. But because where I live... Where I live, the grasslands are not grain. There's some alfalfa, but it's mostly just hay for cattle. It feels a little out of step to be doing bread baking because it is traditional somewhere else.
Yeah, that's what I preferenced earlier. We don't eat grain, but the grass for us is important.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, one thing that we have talked about wanting to do is, so we brew our own cider and our own mead, and we played around a little bit with some of the beers, but one of my fantasies is that we're working on the grassland restoration on our land, and I would love to start playing with brewing some of the, from our wild perennial grasses.
Hmm.
Because that's something that you can do. It started somewhere.
Sure.
Playing with those.
You might need to add some fermentable sugar because the kernels just don't have enough sugar in them in wild grasses. That's why we bred and bred and bred and bred and bred to make those nice fat barley wheat kernels.
That's why it's a kind of a far off dream of working, because takes so darn long too.
It does.
With something and you gotta wait, but
beer is touchy. I mean, I've done a lot of mead brewing, and I feel like I'm pretty good at mead brewing, but beer is so sensitive and it's got so many steps, and there's such good commercial beer available in a cooler at a store right near you now.
Yeah.
I gave up after a while because there were too many cases of where I had, you know, 5 gallons of extremely mediocre beer that I had to get rid of somehow before I could run another experiment.
I hear you on that. Yeah. Yeah. But if anyone is listening and is interested, mead and cider are really good places to start.
Mm-hmm.
If you're interested in that, you can follow some very simple instructions with very little equipment.
They're
but
perfect for
really
the COVID.
Touchy, yeah.
They're perfect for the COVID virus because it's all about sanitation.
Yeah.
It's like the habits that you've developed for dealing with the COVID virus, those extend into your brewing life. You sanitize the hell out of everything. Make sure you don't get any rogue yeast invading your process, and you'll come up with a good product.
Yeah. And those are ones that are a little bit more forgiving when you don't get your measurements quite right.
Right, right.
Whereas I like with the to beer, do, not so much.
No. I like to do a sparkling mead. I use champagne yeast.
Mm-hmm,
And then it ferments in the bottle. I use champagne bottles so they don't explode.
Mm-hmm.
And I do a Yule, or I have done a Yule mead that's made with orange peel and cloves and cinnamon and ginger.
Mm.
And it just comes out just delicious. It's so good. The only thing that's complicated about it is that it requires a refrigeration process to slow the fermentation down. And that means cleaning out my refrigerator so that I can put a 5-gallon carboy into it, which isn't the most popular thing for me to do. But
how long does it have to be in for?
A week.
Okay.
Yeah. It's not too bad. I'm sorry. It's a week, and then you rack to a new carboy and then put it in for another 3 days, I want to say. I don't remember. It's been a few years since I've done it.
Hmm. Wonderful. Well, this is something that next Sabbath is where that we celebrate. I mean, we do it all year, but next Sabbath is about the compost and the microorganisms and the fungi and all of that wonderful soil and fermentation and that part of life.
Great. Well, I look forward to talking with you about that when that rolls around.
Yeah, before we know it.
Yeah, well, give me a chance to catch up at work at least before it becomes September.
So where else did we want to go with this, talking about our August for those of us in the Northern Hemisphere?
You know, honestly, I don't know, because things are so different in different places. I mean, you and I have pretty extreme polarity in the nature of the biomes that we live in.
Mm-hmm.
But that could be said of someone in Vermont relative to someone in
Miami,
yeah, or Louisiana, or, you know, something like that. The United States is a really big country.
Mm-hmm.
And we should also note that we have listeners that are not in the United States at all.
Yeah.
They're in other parts of the world. One of the things that Americans tend not to be aware of is how tipped to the north Europe is, for example. New York City and Madrid are on the same parallel. That's how far north Europe is. I mean, New York is well north in the United States, and Madrid is at the very southern part of Europe. So we have listeners who are much, much closer to the Arctic Circle, and the cycles that they're living through are very, very different. So it's a matter of paying attention and learning what's going on around you, and then turning that into meaningful ritual that helps you to celebrate being alive and being a part of this earth.
And for people who are just starting to really pay attention to their personal wheel of the year, I would encourage you to not feel like you have to get it right the first time, because it's going to take a while to get a sense for what's going on. Even if this is some place where you have lived for many years, when you start paying attention on a different level, there's a lot going on. And I know it's so much fun to try and get the tradition from the beginning, but I invite you to have a little bit of patience with yourself and the process, and know that it's just going to be an ongoing process of refining that year after year.
I really agree with that, and particularly in the context of climate change, mm-hmm. because any one year can be a real outlier in terms of what your overall climate is going to be now. So, you know, one data point is just not enough. You can come up with your own understanding about what the metaphor meanings are for this particular time of the year. And what you might find a couple of years out is that actually that's happening in 3 or 4 weeks later.
Yeah.
And so you need to kind of rework what your themes are. And that's fine. There isn't a wrong way to do it. That's the important thing. You're not committing some kind of a sin by practicing and celebrating in the way that seems best and most appropriate at the time.
Yeah. And if certain dates don't quite work for you, at least for us, we are quite relaxed on what the actual dates are when we celebrate things. And then even the days that we typically assign to the cross quarters that aren't even the actual cross quarters when you look at it, you count the days.
Yes, exactly. It's not August 1st. It's more like August 7th. But for me, that means that sometime during the week of August 1st, when it is convenient and the stars align, then I can, you know, do my ritual and my celebration. But I'm not on the hook to have to, you know, do it on a Wednesday.
Yeah.
In the middle of my work schedule or something like that.
Yeah. And if you're in a time period where you can have gatherings and that's part of it, then you're working with trying to figure out the whole social element of when can we actually all get together, and you don't have to worry about leaving somebody out because you're doing it at exactly 3:06, you know, PM on Tuesday.
Right. Yeah. Right.
So, yeah.
So we wish you the most joyous of the season, however you define the season and however you celebrate it. For those of our friends who are in the Southern Hemisphere, I know it's cold now, and you're just looking at the very beginning of the growing cycle for your coming year, and we wish you well in that endeavor as well. It's a good time for doing some planning and maybe sharpening up your instruments of various kinds, whether that means backing up your hard drive or sharpening your garden tools.
Getting that oil change you've been putting off.
Exactly, yes. all those things. So in any case, we are so grateful that you choose to listen to us. Thank you so much for being here. And we'll talk with you again soon.
Thank you, everyone.